one of the things that creates so much havoc in the world today is that as a human species, we have lost trust that we can sort things out together with a lot of creativity when we need to and when the conditions are right. As humans, we are designed to be creative. When you think about what we have been able to achieve as humans since the birth of humanity, it's incredible. If we just look around at what we're able to create, what we're able to create together, even in relationships, it's beautiful, right? But for all kinds of different reasons, we've lost our trust in our own capacity to create, to innovate, to collaborate. And I think what the practice of nonviolent communication or convergent facilitation for that matter gives us is a rebuilding of that trust. And that's where hope is anchored for me.
Welcome to Emerging Emmaus once again, and we have the joy and privilege to share about nonviolent communication, something that meant a lot to me and our church in Irvine, because I was involved with Yverenne in a couple of courses and found the principles vital and really helpful for processing difficult conversations and having the courageous conversations that we needed to have. First of all, tell us a wee bit about yourself, Verene. Who's Verene Nicholas?
That's a very large question, Neil. Maybe not as large as I think. Anyway, thank you for inviting me. I hadn't been in touch with you for a few years, so it's lovely to be remembered in the work that I did with you and the congregation. I am... I'm based in Govan. I've been living in Scotland for a few decades now. I guess the main passion of my life for a long, long time now has been about like finding ways by which I can add a little brick to the wall of bringing humanity together. To be well together, to work well together, to worship well together, and just to enjoy what it means to be living beings on this beautiful planet Earth. And so what I'm doing is that I am trying to do exactly that, which is to share tools and methodologies and ideas that help us to reconcile ourselves with what it means to be human beings. And I do it in various contexts.
That accent, that lovely accent that you have comes from, you've got a beautiful Scottish accent, but there's a wee sneaky accent behind it. Forgive me for calling it sneaky, it's beautiful.
Well, it could be a mix, because actually when people wonder where I'm from, they usually locate me in the Netherlands. But I'm from France originally. And before I came to Scotland, I was in Ireland, and I picked up some of my accent there. So maybe I don't have it anymore because that was so long ago. But yeah, people can confuse it a little bit with a little bit of Irish.
There's definitely an Irish tilt, an Irish lilt when you say Ireland.
That's great. I've not lost it. I love that. I love that.
And you married a Scotsman, did you?
That's correct. Yeah, Alistair McIntosh, who will be known by many of your listeners because he often does Salt for the Day on BBC Radio Scotland and has been involved with issues with Christianity and spirituality in the church for a long, long, long time. Yeah.
Now, my friend, I remember vividly sitting in a group, being introduced to this possibility of doing this course with you in nonviolent communication. And the thing that hooked me was that we have everything in common with a terrorist. And of course, it was shocking.
Did I really say that?
That is a statement.
Yeah, you really, well, you said something to that effect.
It wouldn't
you know?
Surprise me.
And in other words, the terrorist has human needs similar to our own or that are common to humanity. The difference is the way that people are meeting those needs. And one of the challenges often in conflict is finding better ways to meet those needs that people can agree to, which won't always happen, of course. But that's the business you're involved in that you've just described, as I understand it, Viren. Is that right?
That's correct. I'm amazed that you took me seriously when I said something as controversial as.
I understood the humor in it. Yeah.
Well, I guess it was provocative, but I was also very serious in the sense that I do believe that's the case. I believe that a terrorist is also a human being, and therefore at the level of our fundamental humanity, we're not different. Where we do differ is, I guess, what we are prepared to do to get our needs met.
Mm.
Yeah, so it is possible that when it comes to dignity or wanting to be heard, wanting change to happen in the world, I don't imagine that you, Neil, me, or Ruth would take up arms and go and do terrible things to people with just, you know, just living their life in the most peaceful way possible. I don't think any one of us would do that here. And yet, in the case of the terrorist, he, she, they are doing that possibly because they haven't found any other way by which their dignity could be upheld and that they feel that they could have any power to change the situation in their, you know, amongst their community and the people that they're attached to. So that's the difference between us. It's what we're prepared to do to fulfill things that are important to us, but it's not the things themselves. In other words, it's not what is at the core of what makes us human that is different. That, to me, is the same. Yeah. A terrorist will have exactly the same longing for dignity, as I said, or the wanting to influence things, wanting to, his loved ones, his family, to be well. You know, it goes on and on. These are the fundamental human needs that we all share.
There's a naughty joke in Church of Scotland parlance that says, or asks the question, what's the difference between an organist and a terrorist? Well, you can negotiate with a terrorist. And of course, apologies to all organists in our midst. Here in Irvine, we have wonderful organists and musical directors. However, you know, in the Church of Scotland at the moment, there's a fair bit of pain. There's a fair bit of aggro. And there's a lot of need for healing and reconciliation and negotiation because of our presbytery plans, buildings being closed down and heritage being let go of. And there's a great need for mediation and for learning to listen to each other. Are you aware of this pain at the moment in the Church of Scotland, Viren?
Not in a very acute way, because I've not worked with the church for maybe a couple of years. What you're saying doesn't surprise me, though, because in a way the issues are not new. They were already there when I was working with priority area parishes. And I imagine that they have gone crescendo, knowing what I know about the restructuring. Yeah,
I think it's really insightful of you to say that it's not something new, because in one sense it's with people, isn't it? And it's, you know, whether we call it change or whether we call it growth, it's a transformation from one place and being to another. And what really struck me with what you were mentioning before, it's a really powerful example that you were talking about. I felt that in your ministry of reconciliation, it sounds like a really important part is understanding the other people that are involved in the situation and almost humanizing each other. And I'm just wondering, is that quite an important part of the process and within reconciliation?
Yes, I think the word humanizing is very well chosen. And the reason is because what happens in a conflict is that we separate. In other words, we, even in small ways, we stop seeing the other as fully human as we are. So we assign to them intentions, qualifications, labels, and we dehumanize them, because the pain that we feel as a result of the conflict, the disagreement, it can go towards, you know, a degree of violence, even if we are in the Middle East in the moment, is so great that it's very difficult to be able just to hold the pain that we feel and to hold the humanity of the person that may be the trigger to that pain, or may have caused the violence or the disagreement, you know, to an equal, you know, level of like honoring in a way. So we dehumanize as a way, in my understanding anyway, as a way of protecting from the amount of pain that we feel as a result of the conflict.
Do you think it's actually achievable? Is it realistic in places of conflict? If we're thinking about our churches and the tensions and the difficulties, the challenges that so many of us are facing, and it's hard, it's sore, we're in places of pain. Is it realistic for us, or how realistic is it? How achievable is it for us to take that perspective of humanizing and understanding different views from different people that might be in the, around the table with us, to the point whereby we can love them and we can have that reconciliation?
I think it's possible, and it can never be forced. So there needs to be capacity, in a way, built within the group, within a relationship, for the rehumanizing to be possible. And by that, I mean that very often when people have been very deeply hurt, and sometimes for years, because it's like, you know, the in an organization or in the church, as far as I know, there have been dehumanizing acts happening, you know, for years often, you know, either within the culture of the organization as a whole or within a particular congregation. And so there's been like accumulated and layers of hurt that need so much like tender attention and loads and loads and loads of space for empathy, for mourning, for really acknowledgement of how much pain there is between people, before people can feel some kind of curiosity and openness to hear what might have been going on in the other person or the group of people that they attribute the origin of their pain, if you like, depending on their actions, etc. So it's like it's a very delicate process. It's very rare when there's been a lot of conflict that people can come to a place of reconciliation just on their own. There needs to be some kind of process that helps people to feel deeply heard for their pain, and then helped to see the humanity of the other person again. It is possible. It can take time. It requires some slowing down. It requires, in the first place, a willingness for people to come together and speak. Yeah, does that answer your question, Ruth?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm really encouraged with what you're saying as well. Just knowing that, yes, there is hope in amongst all the pain that there is and conflict that so often can be in amongst society. It's not just within the church, let's face it. But as you know, that there is that hope that yes, there is a path to reconciliation. It's really hopeful. Neil, did you say that you had this course with Brain as well? And you know, What's your experience with it?
Yeah, so there have been several things that I journey with constantly that really I found helpful. And the one, trying to neutralize my language when I'm describing what has happened. Very easily we put spin on or we put interpretation on. And so it's really helped me in my emails in particular. And of course, often email's not the right way to do it. It's a blunt instrument and it really needs to be face to face with people. That's hard lesson learned many times over the years. But I think the thing that really has especially struck me and helped me is the realization that every action that we have or take is to meet a need. So a lady stormed out of our meeting once, and I thought, what's going on there? And if you're defensive, you think, well, what have I done? And to get over that defense, you know, you have to think more positively, what's going on in her life? And of course, it was the anniversary of her husband's death, and no one had noticed, and she hadn't been heard in that regard, as Bren puts it, and that was really helpful. So every action, even everything that we might say sometimes, is to meet a need. So I find that really helpful. So it forces me to think, well, what's really going on behind the surface here? So if someone's, you know, really angry with you or angry with the situation, you know, what's going on in their lives? Of course, it can be complex. It's not just one thing often. It's not just the fact that their building is being let go of, or, you know, that this has happened or that has happened. There can be a complexity of things. But, you know, Viren, I'm interested. It's difficult in a just a short podcast to distill, you know, the help that nonviolent communication can be. But if you could distill it in a few principles, how would you do that?
I think I'd like to do it by coming back to the example you just gave, Neil, of this person who left the room, and yes, you did not know what was happening for her. You just noticed that she'd left and you felt that it was uncomfortable. You had no idea what was going on. What nonviolent communication, how nonviolent communication helps us in this situation is that, first of all, it can help us to, what I would say, track what is going on within us in that moment. And to, first of all, recognize that in that moment we're feeling quite uncomfortable, we are a little bit discombobulated because it's like, okay, well, what have I done, as you said? And then to recenter around, okay, I'm feeling uncomfortable, what is that connected to? So it helps us to identify the needs for us in this situation that are alive, as I say. So for me here, if I was in your shoes, I would want some clarity as to what is happening. I have probably a need to care as well, because I'm noticing that this person left, so that there's probably something that's not been great for her. So there's something about care. There may be something else going on for you about what's happening at that moment, whether it's because it's the middle of the church service and there is some kind of a disruption. So you also want to attend to what's happening to the group. Yeah, care for the group, care for the person, clarity, and then maybe a sense of reorienting to what to do. Yeah, so I also have clarity as to what is called of me if I'm the leader of the church. In relation to this situation, what am I going to do next here? Do I need to interrupt the meeting? Do I need to attend? Do I need to run after the person? What do I need to do? So that's the first thing that this practice is doing, is that it's helping me to figure out what I need to do with myself in a situation where there's discomfort. And then there is the dimension of like trying to understand what's happening for the other person. And so in that situation, first of all, I want to connect to the fact that this person has taken an action that may be disruptive, but there is a valid human reason as to why this person has left the room. And what that does is that it prevents me from going into some kind of judgment, saying, oh, that's really selfish of this person. So, oh, how inconsiderate of her to have left the meeting in the middle of, you know, and leaving everybody in the dark as to what's going on. That would be a judgmental way of reacting to this situation. And what nonviolent communication is helping us to do is to, even if we don't know, is to remind ourselves that there is something happening for this person that is probably understandable from the perspective of human needs. And it gives us more choice as to what to do in that situation that's more aligned to my values. In other words, here, I can be very reactive. And, you know, you can imagine the worst possible scenario by starting to, you know, go into what I would judge as like a tantrum, like to become really angry and just say, what's going on here, folks? This is, you know, unbearable. And, you know, it's always like that when we have important meetings. Somebody's going to storm out of the room. And, you know, that would be a really reactive situation. But actually, it happens that somebody who's in a situation of leadership goes into a really big reaction. And that would be so unhelpful for everybody. So instead, we can be a little bit more grounded and in choice and saying, what would be the most appropriate response in a situation like that to attend to the needs of everybody, including the person who's just come, you know, who's just left the room? Yeah. So I can think a little bit more quietly, if you like. And in that situation, I may well actually just say to the group, okay, I noticed that, you know, our friend Jane has just gone out of the room. I am a little bit worried about her well-being. I'm wondering what's happening for her. At the same time, I'm a little bit embarrassed that we need to stop this meeting in the middle of a really important decision. And we're just about to decide something. And now we're, you know, I am interrupting the meeting because I'm feeling myself distracted by what's happening with Jane. And so I would like to propose that we pause for 5 minutes and maybe I'll ask John to go and have a little chat with Jane, come back and just give us a little report, and then we'll see what we do with that. So I'm basically navigating this situation the best I can, given all the things that are happening in the room, but I'm not reacting. I'm trying to really walk that situation step by step in a considerate, dignified and responsible way. Yeah, so nonviolent communication is a practice that helps us to respond to a situation of discomfort, of tension, of conflict, and even maybe violence and destruction in a way that's more aligned with our values.
Mm-hmm. And so we're allowing ourselves to understand what's going on in ourselves and what other people's situation. You're talking about quite a multifaceted dimensional. So with Jane or with the group or with myself, that's clearly, well, I can speak from experience, a skill that has to be sharpened and honed and grown, and it grows from certainly my own experience, from a learning to be at home within your own skin. And learning to know that you're loved, and that thus you can love, and so you can be able in that situation to neutralize the kind of temptation sometimes to escalate the conflict or the violence as it might be understood.
I wouldn't say neutralize, actually, Neil. I would say transform. Because neutralizing is almost like putting a brake on our emotions. And actually, I don't think that's particularly helpful, because they will come back through the back door as soon as we try to. there's a process of actually accepting the full expression of our humanity, including when we become angry. You know, it makes sense. It's human to react in that moment. And what nonviolent communication helps with is to become more accustomed to our vulnerability and to be able to express. Even like I I got angry, and this moment I got out of kilter was what was happening here. I was anxious, and it led to actions that I now regret. You know, all of that is accessible to us if we are willing to relax into the fact that, yeah, as humans, we will react like that at times, you see? And it's also, about becoming more accustomed to expressing our feelings as well as our needs, as well as what we need in that moment. Yeah.
And Viren, you're involved in various activities now, and you've got a course that you're starting about, was it CV? I can't quite remember exactly what it is. Tell us a wee bit about it.
Yeah, the work that I'm doing more and more of at the moment is actually it's a methodology to help to make decisions collaboratively. Now, it's very relevant to the situation that you're describing in the church just now about how decisions are made about things that people deeply care about. You know, they're building a culture that they have developed for decades, and how do we bring together all the people that are impacted by certain decisions and go through a process to understand what's deeply important to people and what are the different options that are available to meet all the considerations that are there on the table. So it's a methodology for collaborative decision making that builds on nonviolent communication and expands it to the area of collaborative decisions, if you like. So in a situation where a congregation or several congregations need to come together and worship under the same building and actually merge or become a, you know, form a union, what this process offers is the possibility of all the people who are impacted by the decision to come together to have their voice, their needs, what is important to you, put to them deeply heard and taken into consideration, and to look at all the different options within the constraints. And it's really important that there are constraints. We need to do with what is there. You know, it's there are constraints on resources, there are constraints on time, etc., etc. And within those constraints, what can we do to address all the considerations that are on the table? When we engage with a process like that, and that we end up with an outcome that everybody can live with. The thing is, what's really important is that the outcome is not usually what people deeply want, but it's an outcome that people can live with. And they can live with it, not only because they've taken part in carving different options, if you like, but also they have heard all the other people around the table and they've heard what's important to them. They have had the experience of their voice being taken into consideration, or their opinions, what's really deeply important to them. And that in the process of dialoguing, if you like, with all the people who have a voice in this decision, there also may be a bit of space for them to mourn the loss that is involved in the situation, which is absolutely essential to get to a point where everybody feels aligned and say, given the constraints, given what's important to everybody, given that we are, that we still want to continue to worship together, here's what's possible and here's what we're going to try to do. And then we can maybe evaluate in 6 months' time, is it working, is it not working? There's all kinds of things that can enter into that process. How are we going to make decisions from now on? How are we going to use this space? You know, we can come up with very detailed agreements about different aspects of what it means to be this new congregation, for example. But at least we've decided together.
Yes. And just briefly, could you point us in a direction of where people will have missed this particular course, but could you point us in a direction if people are interested in following this up and finding out more, where...
Yes. So we have the people I'm working with, the team I'm working with, have a website which will contain all the information of future courses, and it's www.convergentfacilitation, so convergent facilitation.org, O-R-G.
Excellent. That's marvelous.
And there will be, you know, courses in the future. We are running all kinds of different things. So there are resources. There's a whole other website full of resources for learning the methodology. There's a book that people can read. There's extensive materials to learn this methodology. Yeah.
Yes, that's great. I'll ask Ruth in a moment, perhaps one of her takeaways. For me, Viren, as we come to conclude this interview, which I've thoroughly appreciated, Emerging Emmaus itself is attempting to explore ways forward, and lament and grief is the first step that we recognize. You know, you've got the people and the two in the road to Emmaus, and they're grieving, they're mourning. And yet there's this degree of hope. They've heard that Jesus might be alive. What's happening here? He's dashed our dreams. And of course, he comes alongside and he helps them to move into a different dimension, transforms their emotions and their feelings, as you describe it. And of course, he dines with them and he disappears. But there's that opening of light into the situation. So the process and the tools that you've been describing and that are available to us, I think are can really be a helpful, and I have found helpful in several situations in our situation here in Irvine. But what about yourself? We'll give you a chance to respond in a moment, Viren, but what about yourself, Ruth?
Well, I'm a newbie to Viren and to your work and your reconciliation ministry, and it's been wonderful to hear about, been so inspiring, and a story and a ministry that really gives solid hope. That's kind of what I'm feeling, and I'm feeling that because what I'm taking away from today is that when we are in a place that's really uncomfortable, because conflict can be a place that's just so yucky that we just want to get out of it as quick as we possibly can. But actually, what I'm taking away from you today is to recognize that uncomfortableness within that conflict scenario and not have a knee-jerk reaction, whether that's to, you know, deal with the people maybe, or the person or the situation, or to run away, you know, just to not do that, but actually to slow down and be aware that you're feeling uncomfortable and why. And then also the reconciliation, what you've talked about today has just been slowing down with the purpose of tenderly understanding the other people, coupled up with this hope that you are going to be reconciled. There will be reconciliation as we understand one another more, appreciate, and have that tenderness. It's been so rich speaking with you and hearing from you with it. I'm really thankful for you coming on, and we'll certainly look to share the links on the podcast information as well.
Yeah, is there a time just to say a little bit in response to what Bruce has said? Yes. What strikes me in what you said is that, first of all, I think it's really important to recognize that actually at the heart of conflict is care. Now, this may feel a bit counterintuitive, but the reason why we get into conflict with each other is because we care so much about certain things. And even if we can, in the midst of our upset, even if we can just for a moment remember that the reason why we disagree is because there are things that we that are so important to us that we would be prepared to actually say to the person, no way, you're not going to do that to me, da da da. It's because we do care about certain things, and in that sense we're so much the same. Yes, so that's the one thing I would say. And the second one one of the things that creates so much havoc in the world today is that as a human species, we have lost trust that we can sort things out together with a lot of creativity when we need to and when the conditions are ripe. As humans, we are designed to be creative. When you think about what we have been able to achieve as humans since the birth of humanity, it's incredible. If we just look around at what we're able to create, what we're able to create together, even in relationships, it's beautiful, right? But for all kinds of different reasons, we've lost our trust in our own capacity to create, to innovate, to collaborate. And I think what the practice of nonviolent communication or convergent facilitation for that matter gives us is a rebuilding of that trust. And that's where hope is anchored for me.
Yes, that's lovely. And what, maybe just to conclude, one of the things that I attempt to do when I face situations that are difficult is to ask the question, what is the best case scenario here? And pray into that and move towards that. And I personally find that, and I think working with yourself, Irene, and learning from yourself has played into that creativity and positivity, for which I'm very grateful. And I know many people are very grateful. And we're very grateful that you've been willing to come into this podcast. And we wish you well in everything that you're doing. Blessings. In your neighbourhood trudge two dumped Jesus friends, drowning before dawning, moving through a maze of misery to an amazing Emmaus encounter. Emerging Emmaus.
Good grief, our dream is dead. Going home instead, comfort of my bed.
Good grief, the pain. Hope hard to sustain, love down the drain.
Good grief, where have you been? What we've seen? Blown to smithereens.
Good grief, how our hearts burned, our minds turned, all we learned.
Good grief, don't go away. Come in to stay. You've shown the way.
Good grief, how he broke the bread with hands that bled, then disappeared.
Good grief. Jesus alive? No need to strive, chance to thrive. Jesus alive.
Good grief, no time to waste. Now we have a taste to Jerusalem with haste.
Emerging Emmaus, a well-kent lament echoes through the years. How long? How long? Good as is the grieving process, may it be a means to access visions and dreams of Christ's kingdom come. Emmaus, emerge from the gloom. Come, Holy Spirit, come. So for future podcasts, join us via the Sanctuary First website, Facebook page and app, and also via Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Come on, tune in.